Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Every Sunday we get together with a guest from the distance running world,
giving you an insight into the lives and training of some of the UK's best athletes and coaches.
You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all major podcast streaming services.
You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Sunday Podcast, where we post about our past and present guests, host giveaways, and much more.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Welcome back, guys. This week, we spoke to 144 800-meter man Carl Langford. Carl took bronze at last weekend's British Champs and booked his spot to Eugene for the Worlds later this month. He's having a bit of a comeback season after a fantastic junior career and then finishing fourth at London 2017 in the World Champs. So we're looking forward to see how he goes this summer.
Yes. Big weekend. Big guest, Carl Langford. He's back on the plane to the World Championships. We're delighted for him. As he reminded us, he was the last British man to make an 800-meter global final. He hopes to do it again. We talk about that. We talk about the trials, the champs. We do mention Max Bergen a little bit. Is there a rivalry there? Maybe not quite yet, but it's interesting to see his, you know, hear his take on that. And we start off actually because, you know, Carl's season, it's been a terrific season. He's back to his best. He's PBing. He's making teams again. And this, ironically enough, is the first season he's unfunded, unsponsored. And he took a gamble on himself at the start of the year. He was at the verge of quitting. Took a gamble on himself. He had that hunger back, that desire to really get to the highest level again. And he just, you know, he just felt all the pressure was off him. Especially, you know, here in the UK, it was obviously scrutinized a lot. So we talk about this season. Very interesting. Went over to America as well, left John Biggs. So we talk about all of that. We talk about his career, the World Champs in 2017, coming fourth, how that then affected him. Or sort of 2018 onwards, how that kind of affected him, his mentality. But also, look, we've spoke a lot this week kind of about the media and the athlete relationship. We've seen it in the news and stuff as well. And Carl is someone who's been portrayed as a very good person. He's had a lot of positive news, but he's also had a lot of negative news as well. And we talk about how that affected him, and it did affect him, and he does open up on that front as well. So it's cool to see it. I don't know if cool is the right word, but it's interesting to see it from an athlete point of view when it comes to their relationship with the media. And we actually get his thoughts on how to make track and field better as well. So he shares his thoughts on that. All round, brilliant podcast, brilliant guest. We've been meaning to get on for a while, but you know what? I think the timing just hit perfectly this week with, you know, him kind of making that team and PBing and stuff. So, and I think, you know, he was in a real good place to kind of talk about his whole career quite deeply as well. So we're grateful for that. So thank you, Carl. And look, enjoy the episode, guys, and we'll catch you next week.
Carl, first off, welcome to the podcast and congrats on team selection today.
Thank you. Yeah, cheers. Nice. It's good to be back in the team.
Yeah. How did it feel? Obviously, I presume you're pretty much expecting it, but obviously there must be a little bit of nerves kind of with the first, third spot.
Yeah, to be fair, once I crossed the line on the weekend and I thought third, that should do it. I was pretty sure, but as it went on, I'm talking every 30 minutes, I was slightly more like people were telling me I needed to go speak to the selectors and things and, you know, make sure I've got a case towards it. And I was going, damn, I might not be. They like, really might not select me. So I was thinking, I was like, nah, I was like, surely not. But You know, it's hard going up against a good friend as well, Elliot. You know, I would have preferred it to be someone else, but, you know, yeah, you know, we had a little message and stuff today and it was all good. You know,
not my feelings. But... Yeah, no, that's something I want to touch upon, you know, because you're 100 to go, he's tying up, you're coming strong, you're kind of kicking him down.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's no friends, you know, when spots are on the line, world champs and stuff, but... Yeah, what was kind of your emotions like after the race, even almost during the race, if you had any at that point?
The thing I know, like when I was running, I was further off the pad than I really wanted. I wanted my whole game plan was to go in and like was to sit on max, and I got out pretty good, but I got caught at 200 and I just lost the gap. And I've never raced someone like Matt. I've never raced Max before, and it was weird. It was like he was just pressing the whole time. Like usually there's a part in the race where it kind of relaxes, you can get back on it. Like I was like, once he starts to relax, I'm going to just try and squeeze and try and get back onto him. And it was like, it was just pressure the whole time. Like when I thought he was going to ease up, he just kept pushing. And like, I just felt the gap open, like kept open. I was going, that's not good. Like I'm better being on someone and holding on to it. And then once there's a little gap, it just sort of opened. And I knew at 300 to go, I was feeling good. And I saw Elliot wasn't looking too great. He was at the back of the pack there, the front pack. And I knew kind of at 200 that I'd had him. I was like, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to catch the top two. But you try not to think about, I was more just focused on, all right, let's get that first one. I was a little bit angry that the game plan didn't go to plan, because, you know, I definitely felt like I was in good form and shape, but I just didn't get it right on the day, but managed to come away with third. So
yeah, managed to do the job. It was interesting because, like you said about the 200, after two, you were a pack at 200 meters, yeah, and then it went completely single file, strung out. So I didn't know if, like you say, Bergen just pushed on a lot that second 200. It looked like that, but then also I want to just ask about, because you train with Joel so much,
yeah,
is it easy to see when he's tying up compared to other people?
Elliot's a weird one. Like he just sometimes he gets quite tense in his upper body, but sometimes he can do that and he'll be fine. You just never know. Like I feel like I've always had a really good tell with body language in racing. Like I can see someone's body language, like the way they're running, and I always go, well, I've definitely got that person. And then sometimes I might go into it a bit more like, oh man, this is a 50-50 here. Like they might be able to hold it. And there's been, sometimes I've been surprised. Like I was racing this Kenyan guy once and I was for sure at 200, he was absolutely blowing. And I was starting to move on his shoulder. And I was thinking, this guy's gone. And then he got to the last 50 and just took off. And I went, where'd that come from? I tend to feel like I've got a pretty good read on people on the last 100, but yeah. It was a weird race.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned kind of coming into like good form before. Obviously, you ran the standard, like what, 6 days before the trial, something like that. Is that almost the perfect time to do it? Just being on an upward curve and thinking, I guess there's more stress of having to get it first, but knowing that you're in the shape of your life going into the week of the champs.
Yeah, definitely give me a lot of confidence. I don't like to race a ton consecutively. I'm actually better nitpicking my races and not having to rush. And I felt like I was having to squeeze as many races in as I could, because the problem was the three fastest races I was in prior to my PB, I had won and it was all 146. And I was like, I knew I was in good form. Some of the stuff I was doing in training and how I was racing, I was beating good guys who were running quick. So I was like, I know I've just got to get into a quick race where someone's going to take me through six. And then, I was basically in Bern. I won the 800. It was in 147. No, I went with the pace and I didn't fancy it either. And then I heard there was a race in Germany. The Aussie guys were setting up and Joe Deng was going to be doing it. I was thinking, perfect. He goes always goes hard. So I was thinking, all right, get out to Germany. He pulled out and I started, I was rushing. I literally got back from Switzerland, booked the flight, left the next day and headed over. So it was a little bit stressful. So I would have preferred like not to have to rush around, but I mean, I'm so glad I just got the time because I know I could get it. It was just more finding the race. So I kind of took the risk, paid a ton of money to get out of Germany because the flights were extortionate and luckily it paid off, to be fair. But I'd have preferred to be able to relax the week before just because I've had kind of 3 weeks where I've been racing, you know, 2-3 times a week.
Yeah, that's the side of the sport that we probably, you know, as fans and not many people know about, we don't appreciate as much as, even someone like yourself, you know, off to the World Championships has to fork out, you know, go into his own pocket just to get a flight to Germany just to run a standard.
Yeah, it was all right when I had funding with British Athletics and and when I was sponsored by Nike, but I was dropped by Nike 2 years ago and I've been off funding for a year now. So even all the altitude camps, everything, like I'm currently unsponsored, everything I've funded this year has come out of my savings. Like I've really backed myself, and that it was kind of a bold, you know, kind of a bold move really, because I went to San Diego, a super expensive place, Flagstaff for months. And it was like, it was kind of, I was kind of banking on myself running well because I knew I could do it. I just, it was a bit of a risk, and it's definitely, the bank definitely took a big hit, and I've definitely struggled. Financially, it's not been great recently, to be fair. So I'm hoping I might get some sort of sponsor to help out soon because it's been tough.
No, it's interesting you say that, though. Do you think, you know, given that this year, you know, being your own sponsor, if you like, looking after yourself, no pressure, having to prove anything to anyone, has that enabled you to almost, because you know, this year you've pushed on, the old Carl's almost back, to be honest. I mean, you've PB'd, you've been out the game, like you say, we'll probably talk about all that history, what's happened over the past, 5 years and stuff. But do you think having almost that pressure, like you haven't had any pressure, you've just been backing yourself, that confidence, that's kind of helped you change in a way?
Yeah, it's been a weird, there've been some seriously bad times this winter. It's been like, there's been some definitely dark moments. I mean, last year I was pretty much ready to quit. I was completely done with it. I was pretty much out of the sport at the point last year. I just wasn't enjoying racing. I almost just ended up resenting the sport a little bit, and there almost was something where something changed. And I think, you know, I think I was so worried about what other people thought of me as well. And then just actually, I just started to set not caring about it. Like, do you know what? I'm going to back myself. I made a big decision, you know, to move away from John. People helping me. Terence Mahone's been kind of setting a program that I kind of altered to work for myself. But, he's been great. Even John's been great, you know, supporting me and stuff. So, it's been quite a bit of a pressure year as well, especially the money I put into it. Like, the annoying bit is I spent about $6,000 on a training camp in San Diego. Got myself in absolutely unbelievable shape for indoors. I run 1:46 first race out, and I was like, oh, I'm ready to pop on here. And then I smashed the session the Tuesday after, and the day after my calf just went, I don't know what, my calf just locked up. And I was like, I was fuming because I got into Birmingham Grand Prix indoors, and I headed back, and I was like, I still couldn't run. And I was going, I've just spent all this money on this camp. And I've just gone and got injured first race out. And I was like, it wasn't even anything serious, it just was I don't know what I'd done. I think I may have tore my calf, I'm not sure. But I was like, typical, and then obviously I had such a good winter block, and then that happens, and I'm like, well, now I'm nursing this. It's like, how is it gonna, same thing gonna happen in the summer? So I was like, man, that was brutal. But I picked myself back up, got back out to the US. I was training with some boys called the Hoeys. There's like 3 brothers, and kindly enough, their dad helped me he kind of paid me as a training partner, flash coach. And so I helped them out, and it kind of worked out for me as well.
Yeah, mate. Just before Lum jumps in, I want to just touch upon the Hoeys because I had heard about this a little bit. Just explain, I mean, we're going to get to kind of like why you left John Big, but just explain that situation with the Hoeys then.
So, I met them once in San Diego last year when I was doing a race in California. And this year, when I was doing New Balance, Terence knows them quite well. Terence used to train with the dad and used to coach them a little bit as well. So he said, oh, while we go over to the East Coast, why don't you, we will stay with the Hoeys. Their dad basically, he runs an investment firm.
He's like a millionaire, right?
He loves the sport. Yeah. So basically we went up there, he built an 8-lane track on his land. There's a gym and stuff, so it is pretty that, and the track is unbelievable as well. Like, it's they basically, I think as soon as Oregon was made, he got the same guys over and basically made it exactly the same.
Wow.
It's an unreal track, so they're very fortunate, and I was very luckily enough to be able to go over there and train. And he, like, it's even certified, so you can do meets and, like, he's done meets and stuff. Like RJ Wilson raced on it, and
right.
Yeah, so they've had some good athletes.
So you were there training, but you were also coaching his two sons as well, right?
Yeah, I was kind of like just helping them out a little bit. So obviously none of them were really running when I got there. They had Matt Centro Senior as their coach, but it just didn't seem to work. Like I said, when I got there, none of them were running. So I started taking a bit more a hold of Josh, the middle son. He's run 147. He started jumping in with me more. He pretty much hadn't run for about 6 months. So I was kind of like helping, like jumping with me here, maybe don't do too much and all that sort of thing. And he ended up running after about 4 weeks, 147. So it was pretty well. And he made it to the US, US trials. So they're a lovely family, and I was very grateful for them helping me.
Yeah, wow. Obviously, let's rewind a little bit then, because you mentioned leaving John Big. Like, kind of how did that situation come about? Because obviously you had some great success with him over the years.
Yeah, I just felt like I was very stagnated in my life in general. I just felt like, pretty much since 2018, I hadn't jumped on. Although, you know, people think I probably have had years where I haven't progressed, but actually, the 11 years I've been running, I've only had 2 years I've not PB'd, and that was 2016 and last year. So I even PB'd in 2020. So, and the weird thing was when I first joined John, I was so bad at training. Like, I just trained terribly. But I raced really, really well. And then it started to table started to turn. Like, I started to train really, really well. And I got stronger, and my mental ability to, you know, get sessions done. But then last year, I don't know what it was. I don't know if I didn't have the right races, but I just didn't race very well. What was weird, because I was doing some stuff in training that I've never been able to do. So, I just felt like I needed it was more of a mental thing, and, you know, just kind of a change in style of training. I went kind of back to, you know, stuff I was doing with John was very quick, speedy stuff. And I'm already quite naturally speedy. I don't have to do much of it, and I can run a pretty quick four. But I went back to just kind of doing more like pre-K pace stuff, like that 60 to 70 pace, 400 sort of stuff, and just get stronger there, because that massively is, I think, definitely helped. I've lost a lot more weight as well, and I think just the mental, just kind of switching off mentally and doing something different massively helped me.
That's the bold move, man. And like you said, so you kind of went out to San Diego. Why did you feel the need to go out there as such? Because it sounds like Terrence is obviously helping you out, but it still sounds like he's not, you know, your full-time coach, if you like.
Yeah, so I call him up, and we probably should talk and call more, but I mean, I feel like I'm fairly, like, he sends a program over, and San Diego, I was just looking for a change, and I thought the US, getting actually out of the UK, was going to help. So I was kind of, when I went out to Flagstaff by myself, I know a few people up there, and I was jumping in with some of Terrence's group stuff, and it was very similar to my old coach, George, who I first started with. So I quite enjoyed the training, and I felt myself getting fit. I wanted to join Danny Mackey as well. So there was a choice. Right. There was a chance that I was going to go up and maybe jump in their group, but they were signing a lot of new athletes and stuff too. So they was like, we don't know what we can do for you now if you wait out and stuff. But to be fair, it was more, I really enjoyed Terence's training. I've got some good friends in that group. And for me, I don't need to be doing anything crazy or, you know, it was just nice to just get in a, just have something like the training was slightly different. And so obviously with me not being sponsored and stuff, I can't get a coach inside and pay him. And then I said, I can't afford to pay you at the moment, but you know, hopefully it would be like nice to, if say like someone like Adidas or something could they give me free kit and stuff to help out. So I'm just grateful for that. But, you know, someone that I can actually help, like Terence could be a full-time coach and train out there more often. But like I say, it's hard because it was all coming out of my own pocket. So it's kind of like, I just couldn't warrant go back out to San Diego and pay, you know, $6,000 for another training camp for a month. It just I was like, that's not gonna work. So I've still got to definitely get some stuff sorted, but within the long-term coaching thing. But to be fair, I feel like I know myself so well, and I feel like I've done the sport for a long time, and I kind of know what I should be doing. I just need someone there to enforce it almost as well, you know. I feel like I've been like going before going to this track season when I was with the Hoeys Delphia. I was kind of like, Terence was doing the endurance stuff and I was adding a speed session in and adding a session a week, and it kind of worked out pretty well, to be fair. So something similar like that would probably work out in the future pretty good.
Mate, interestingly, did you ever pay John Big? You might not want to answer that, but...
He was contracted to British Athletics and things like that. I know in the UK it works slightly different. So in the US, all coaches have a coaching stipend. That's how the US... And US coaches tend to have brands that back them. We tried to get backing from Nike to help John, but British Athletics did pay John, but obviously British Athletics went and got rid of a few coaches and things like that. So I'm not too sure about all of it. Right. I try and just, but John was, you know, very good that he just wanted the best for his athletes. And
that's
a good thing about, you know, John is such an amazing human, the stuff he does. So, his biggest thing is, he doesn't care about what it looks like on him. He just wants his athletes to be happy. That's the biggest thing. As long as his athletes are happy and they're running well, that makes him happy. And the family are amazing as well. So respect him for that.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you made just about needing a bit of change. Because I think a lot of the time people think, oh, you only move coach if something really goes wrong or there's a massive problem. But actually, I think, like you say, you've been in the sport for a long time and you do just need a change of scenery sometimes, a slight change in training stimulus, and you can kick on again.
Yeah, just refreshing the mind. Do you know what I mean? It's like, everyone's different. Some people like kind of staying in the same thing and it works for certain people. But for me, I just felt like I needed to get the mind going again and enjoy the sport. And that's kind of what I went out to Flagstaff, was starting to enjoy training again, and got out to San Diego, was training well and just started to enjoy it a bit more. And then the performances come, then you enjoy it more. So it was kind of, I feel like, to be honest, it may have, even if I like stayed with John, I feel like this may have still happened because I feel like I just got the racing. I just started to race slightly different and back myself a little bit more. But you never know. These things are like, you don't know what's going
to happen. Yeah, almost just from listening to you, sounds like your mentality switched a little bit. You've maybe got that hunger and desire back, you know? And when we talk about that, let's talk about, you know, 2017, 2018, incredible years for you. You know, that world fourth was, I remember you like blowing up on TV, you know, your BBC interviews. It was huge. Yeah. And what about life, you know, after that? Was it hard to cope with? Because obviously, I feel like as athletes, we're never prepared for that. You know, it just comes, doesn't it? And then you have to then deal with, like you say, being scrutinized year on year.
Yeah. Oh, it was bizarre. 2017 was a bizarre feeling. Like, because I think British Athletics did a real good job after the semi-final of keeping me away from the TV cameras and things. I didn't realize it was going on. I was just chilling out my room. And my mum FaceTimed me and there's like TV cameras in the fish and chip shop. And I was like, I've got nothing. Why are you guys getting this? And then after the final, obviously I was out doing what I was doing. But like, even things like I was getting stopped on the street. It was like, what's that saying? Like, we literally fame for like 10 minutes, like 10 minutes of fame. It was super weird. Just for like 1 week of my life, it was like bizarre. And then, that pretty much packed in quite quick. And then, I had a decent winter going into the Commonwealth. But actually before that, the come down from London was one of the hardest things.
Right.
As soon as London finished, I had flattened straight out. Like I had Birmingham Diamond League a week or 10 days after. And I remember I was trying to do a session. I was trying to do like some hundreds back to back, and I couldn't even break like 14 seconds for 100. I was like,
wow.
I felt like a pancake. I was going, I don't even know how I'm going to race this weekend. And then I was just getting tired. But I had some emotional things going that year as well. I had one of my best friends had died in Australia around March. And then 2 weeks later, my granddad died. So I kind of just like a weird month where I had some emotional stuff go on. But because I was so locked into training and the athlete life, I kind of just blocked it out. Mm. So as soon as like the London World Champs had finished, that was like the main goal of that year. It was like all the emotions came rushing back in. And I think that was probably another thing that kind of flattened me out. So one of the hardest things was the come down from London. 2017 was hard. That weren't easy.
We bounced back.
Yeah. 2018. Well, that was a weird season. That 2018 was a weird season too.
I think, when you were mentioning, you know, you were kind of always race better than you were training and stuff. It always looked like that. Like nothing was out of question when you kind of towed the line. And I think like 2017 proved that. Maybe 2018, we expected a bit more. But yeah, whenever you towed the line, it was like, man, this guy could, you know, you just never know what he's going to do.
Yeah. Yeah, 2018 was was probably the most annoying season I think I've had, because I'd run well at the commies. I should have got gold. The guy who ended up, you know, I only run 1:45 the 2017 season. I wasn't like stupidly quick. I just was I was running PBs in the rounds and in the final, and I feel like maybe if I was in a quick race, I probably would have maybe run quicker. I wasn't in too many quick races that year. But then 2018. I pretty much run 1:48 in Australia before the commies. Then I run 1:45 in the heat, 1:45 flat in the final. And then the guy who won it, he ended up running 1:43 like 2 weeks after. So my mind was going, oh, perfect. Well, I'm just going to run 1:43.
Yeah.
I pretty much got back to the UK for a week, passed my driving test because I didn't know how to drive, and went straight to South Africa. And did a training camp up there. And then I was doing Prefontein. So I had like a 38-hour travel day to Prefontein. And I'd slipped my disc in my back like 2 weeks, like a week before. So that was like uncomfortable. But I got to Pre. I run really well. I think I came fourth. But I mean, I wasn't even a quarter of a second off winning. And I'd beaten some really good guys like Kashot. I beat him and beat a lot of really good guys that would run really well that year. And then pretty much I flew to Rome Diamond League from Prefontein, and I just like had flattened out. Like it just that ruined me. And then I was still training all right, but I was just like absolutely shattered from like obviously coming from Australia, South Africa, then America, then coming back. I generally thought I could just race, and I would be fine. But it definitely took a toll more. And then, obviously, I hadn't really recovered the slip disc in my back. And then every time I was training, the back was kind of getting bad. And I ended up getting epidural in my spine. And then that was the end of my season there. Like, I could have, like, kept training in with the slip disc, but the epidural just kind of like relaxed my whole nervous system. And I'm I'm very intact with my nervous system. Like if something's off, it really, really bothers me. Or I can be like really on, but if I'm really flat and my nervous system's playing up, then it's going to be a bad day. So I kind of like is intact. So as soon as I got the epidural, what like is basically meant to stop your nervous system from, like, it's meant to just, like, ease your nervous system. It messed me up, to be honest. So that was pretty much the end of my season right there and then, getting that injection in my back.
Jeez, man.
That was a bit of a pain, because I think that year, you know, a lot of the guys went on to run 144 low and things like that. And, you know, I was in such good shape. So it was just frustrating. It was frustrating.
Mate, how important is it to plan your season then? You know, these races, like you mentioned earlier as well, kind of having to rush your races in before trials. Yeah. But I think, you know, as fans and athletes, like, we probably don't appreciate how much planning you need to do. Because, yeah, you can't be doing these crazy travels and expecting them to perform and stuff, because one bad race in running, everyone's writing you off again.
Yeah. Oh, that's the thing. Like, bad performance, everyone thinks you're done. But, like I just saw, I remember I was young and I was like 20, 21. So I thought I could do anything. Yeah. But I was watching like Kishore and other like Kenyan athletes and stuff, like flying around racing everyone. I was I can do that.
Yeah.
And then trying to actually do it, like someone who's really good, Elliot's got really good at it. He can bounce around and race.
Yeah.
And he does it really well. Whereas I've never been the type of person to do it, like to necessarily do that very well. This sport is impossible to plan. Like I say, I knew I was in that Germany race the day, pretty much a day and a half before I was in it. Like, I didn't even know. So I was booking the flights the day leaving. It was like, yeah, just, I don't know where I was going next. Like, even I only booked, I'm going to be racing. I'm racing on the second in Ireland. I didn't even know that we only just booked them flights today. So it's kind of like everything's up in the air until, you know, I was maybe going to do Stockholm in a couple of days as well. Luckily I didn't really want to do that, but I wouldn't have known if I was in it probably until today. So the sport is like all on, you race well, you get people wanting to race. If you race bad, you get pulled out of races, then you're looking for races. So it's kind of just like, yeah.
You've been actually pulled out of a race before.
I luckily haven't run so bad that I've actually been pulled out before, but I do know athletes who proven form and they pull people out of races or put them into a B race.
Wow.
Fortunately that hasn't happened to me, but to be honest, it's getting into the races that was hard. Like, I just had no races this year coming to the UK. I got into Birmingham Diamond League B and then pretty much didn't have a plan from there. I was just trying to find things and that, yeah. So it was kind of just a bit weird.
And that must be the most frustrating thing, because obviously you know from previous years that you can get in really good shape, but if your season's best not there, or like you mentioned, your personal best, sometimes it's not at the level that you're racing at in championships. But a lot of the time, these meet directors are just looking at what your PB is on paper, and you know that you've got a 144 in you, but all they see is that 146 season's best or didn't compete last year type thing.
Yeah, and that's kind of what happened to me last year. You know, I probably still think, as bad as I run 146 last year, but I generally, if I had the races, I probably could have still run 144 that year, given I definitely wasn't in as good shape last year as I am this year, but I just didn't have the races last year. And you know, rate meet directors look at what you've run there and they kind of just, like you say, they kind of just base you on what you've got. But yeah, that's why when you have a bad performance, like I did Mount Sac earlier in the year, and like I had the worst trip I've ever tripped over in a race. So I ended up getting like, I was in like third or something, and I ended up being 15 meters behind the pack after the trip.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, and then I go and run, the race is one in 147, and I run 151. It's like, but they don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
They just look at that and go, but, and then the other thing is they don't realize like, 45 minutes after that, I did a 4x4. I'm on a 46 relay split. So it's like people don't see that side of it. And it's like, and then they just see the 151 and then they don't look at the other performances, because then a week later, I run 146 one and one. So it was like, obviously, I'm not in 151 shape, but and you can't blame them. You know, they can't go around and like watch every single race or anything like that. So you kind of understand it, but it is just a brutal sport. Like, it is brutal.
Yeah, I know. Like, it's just like we're going to get on the topic of the power of 10 and, you know, and all the performances, they update and stuff as well. So, you know, I think because everything's so black and white in our sport, like you say, no one has any context to any performance.
Yeah.
And, you know, context is in the race itself, but context in what you're going through as well. Like, no one knows when you went to that Germany race, no one knew your travel arrangements, what you had to do to get there. So had you come away with a bad performance, everyone's just like, ah, Langford's not in shape, you know? So there's that side of the sport as well, which is interesting.
And then even just like a few weeks after the Mount Sec race, I run 147 and came third. And it was like, if you saw the race, I literally was boxed in until the last 50, where I was in ninth place. And I finished off third place by, like, I nearly won it by 0.02. So, like, and that's another thing. It's like context doesn't, like, that's my fault. I put myself in a bad position, but it's kind of like, there's always context to races. Like, that doesn't show you fitness kind of thing. So, but that's a sport. It's like I said, it's brutal, and just getting opportunities can be hard, and making the most of the opportunities. You know, a lot of the time with opportunities, there's a lot of pressure, and, you know, especially for some younger kids and stuff, they can be thrown into these big meets and, you know, this is it. And sometimes if they don't perform, it's hard for them to get back onto a good stage where they probably just need a few races, the experience to get in there. And especially with the UK being so strong at the moment, the opportunities are harder to come by.
Let's talk about being a younger athlete then, because you're someone who you had some really good success kind of world youth, world juniors, like back in 2013, 2014, I think. How was that kind of, because I think you went to those champs and you medaled at world youth and world juniors.
World youth, yeah.
What were those experiences like then?
Well, yeah, like, to be fair, world youth was my second year running. And so I was kind of, it was a little bit mental because you never really know that this sort of stuff's going on, really. But going to a junior champs is massive because you make friends, you meet people, and it's always a good laugh. And I think that's what the sport is about, is having fun. But I think one of the biggest, the hardest things is the transition from junior to senior.
Yeah.
I luckily managed to do it, but do it fairly quick. But it sometimes it's not easy. You know, in the junior competitions, you're getting mollycoddled by the staff. You're not allowed to go out, like, by yourselves, or, you know, it's very, you know, they're very on top of you, making sure you do everything. And so I went to Euro Juniors in 2015. And, you know, you're being mollycoddled by all the staff. And then 4 weeks later, I'm flying out to Beijing for a senior champs. I've got no coach. I'm like a young goofy kid in China by myself. I was getting lost. And it's like, there's people there to help you, but you're an adult now. You're left onto your own devices. You can do whatever you want. And I can imagine luckily I'm quite laid back. Like, it didn't bother me, but for some kids, you know, who are quite dialed in, it can be kind of like overwhelming and hard to deal with.
Yeah, I bet. That's crazy. You're at Euro Juniors and 4 weeks later at Beijing, you know. And was it hard? Because obviously Euro Juniors, everyone's your age. You know, like you say, you can hang out with people. You're a sociable guy. So was it quite hard to integrate with the senior team? Were you surprised with, maybe how difficult it was to, like, socialize? Or was it pretty, did you just slot in, man?
I was super nervous. I remember going to the airport and I'm on the team and I'm going, man, I don't know anyone here. Like, Dina already kind of knew people. So she was the only person I kind of knew a little bit.
Right.
And she already knew people. And I was like, I can't just go and hang around, like, follow Dina around and stuff. So, but weirdly enough, I was roommates with Danny Talbot. And pretty much, I shouldn't have been worried because I ended up making amazing friends, playing PlayStation and going out and eating food. So, it was all like, I think, like, it's more just putting yourself into the social environment, and that's the hardest bit, is putting yourself into it. And then it's always fun when you're there. You know, everyone sits around big tables and we're playing stupid games, or, you know, everyone's very accommodating. I know in some other teams, like countries, it's the opposite. You know, it's very clicky, but in the UK, I feel like everyone hangs out with each other. You know, I was all the other worst bit with Beijing was all the middle distance were at altitude, and I was the only middle distance athlete. in like Japan and the whole of them. I was like by myself hanging out with the sprinters.
Hey, you are a sprinter, man. Is it, to be fair, you know, 46 relay split, is that your best split? Do you reckon you could ever, you know, have you posted a quicker than 46 before?
I did like a European Athletics 4x4. I was on under 20, and I did a 1500 meters. And I won the 15. It was like a European clubs.
Oh yeah.
And they were doing like relay splits, and Kostas Gulyas was like there doing like the official splits and stuff. And I run like 45.9.
Wow.
I absolutely just tore it up. That's probably one of my best runs. So I've always known I've got a good 4 speed, but my 2 speed's pretty good. That's probably why I feel like I could probably run a better 200 than 400 generally.
Wow. Really?
I feel like I could hold the speed for 200, but 400, if I tried to do that, I'd probably die. But yeah, I feel like if I did more 4s, I'd like to think I could probably run 45 flat for a 4 if I trained for it. Obviously,
yeah.
I feel like I can run 143. So
yeah,
it's like you have to go out and do it. It's very different. But I like a 400. Like I did, I always kind of do like one session I do before race and make sure I'm sharp. I'll do like a 400, 30 seconds, 200. And I always tend to run them in 46, 47. So that's kind of like that for me is like the kind of bar of that's where I need to hit. Even if it's early season with no speed, I should always be able to run 47. That's my thing. Like I could probably come off a big winter block. And if I was to do a flat 4, I should pretty much always be able to run 47 at least.
Wow.
So that's kind of like, but the thing is I never really do them too much further into the season. So I never really know how fast I could probably run 4:4.
And then you take 30 seconds of recovery, you come back and do a 200. What's that 200 like? That must be.
Oh, I did one in Dubai. We did a 400, 200 in Dubai before the world champs in Doha. I remember Elliot was doing a different session and everyone was at the track. And the track is quick as well. And I absolutely took off. And someone said I went through 200 like 21.8.
Wow.
I absolutely took off. I think I ran like 46.2 or something. And then. My head, like I'm full up, and, like, I'm dying. And then I think I run like 26 flat. But then after I was on the track for about 45 minutes, like
yeah.
Every time I stood up, like my head felt like, man. Obviously, you guys know the feeling, but
not as much as you. I don't think we can produce that much lactic, man.
Oh, horrid. And I never really get like that too much either. So that was that was quite unique. I did not enjoy that.
Wow.
So with that sort of speed stuff, obviously you mentioned like running a quick relay split when you were younger. Is it something that's not really changed over the years then? Because obviously traditionally we always talk about how, especially probably 800 runners have to, I guess, adjust their training because you probably lose a bit of speed just naturally as you get older. But have you managed to maintain all that?
Well, my flat speed, I would probably say has got quicker.
Okay.
But my endurance is getting better at the same time. It's kind of weird. Like, so I say my flat speed's got better, but my natural speed isn't as good, let's say. So, you know, I feel like I can access a lot more speed once I'm into training and once I get it going. But like before, when I was a kid, I could just go out and just run a 400 and it wouldn't, and you know, pretty much doing no speed wouldn't affect me. I could always just run quick. But as I've got older, I kind of have to, you know, half the problem is actually just getting injured doing it. Like I remember I did some 150s in 2019, early 2019. I was absolutely, Elliot said something. We was on the trail doing tempo. We were doing some 150s after. Elliot said something. I was like, I'm going to show him. I'm going to absolutely smash his one. First one, I go out and my hamstrings just go, ding. And I'm like, oh no, what have I done? I remember I could hear John going, slow down.
Yeah.
Like, off. I was probably running like 15 seconds for a 150 and then, As I went, my hand just went ding. I went, oh, that's not good. That was 3 weeks just for being stupid. So that was, as I got older, that sort of stuff happens more. So
I guess like your injuries are probably, you know, you're never going to suffer from like a stress fracture, really. Yours are all going to kind of be like pulls and tears and stuff. So
like I say, I don't do much sprinting nowadays. Like, to be honest, like I'm probably, my mileage is increased. So this year I was getting up to kind of 50 miles a week. What I know for you guys probably thinks that's not much.
No, that's pretty decent. Yeah. That actually surprises me that you were doing that much, because obviously, you know, when we spoke to Giles and stuff, so obviously well documented, he does a lot of cross training. So it's
that guy does maximum 10 miles a week.
Exactly.
So 10 miles a week.
So it's interesting that someone like yourself you know, feels like you have to do 50.
Yeah. But I can kind of just my body doesn't break down doing the mileage. I can do it and I'm fine. This year I probably could get up to 60 in the winter and it not be too bad. Like I was fine off 50, 55 this year.
Uh-huh.
No problem. So as I got older, my endurance is getting better. I'm getting stronger and it's more my body's able to take it a bit more. It's like the opposite. Like before, if I did more mileage when I was younger, my body would break down. But I could just slam a load of speed. Now it's like the roles have kind of reversed. Like if I go and smack some 150s quick around the track, I'm most likely going to tear something. So, but I can do a load more mileage and it not affect me too much. So it's kind of the point really, isn't it?
How's that broken up in the week now? Do you mind just running us through what you do, sort of kind of typical in the summer, I guess, like if you're not got a race?
Yeah, so at the moment, like... let's say, so if I haven't had a race, at the moment I'm racing pretty much every week, but if I wasn't racing, I would probably try and do some longer stuff on Tuesday, more like kind of just a bit faster than tempo. So that 3K sort of work. And I might do maybe 5Ks or 5 800s of 60 or 200 jog, depending on how hard I want to hit them, just slightly faster than tempo. And then I would get in to do something like, say for today, I had 3 times a K at 255. And then I had 600, 400, 200. And that was just that I started 64 pace, and then I went down to 62, then 60 off short recovery. So it's kind of like not stupidly quick stuff, but like that longer, you know, strength building. And then Thursday, I'll probably do some tempo work. Maybe with some sprints of the back end. And then Saturday, usually I go quite hard. That'd be like a 400, 200 times two or times three. Like, you know, really trying to push the system and get in the hurt zone. So that's kind of like the standard week with runs and stuff in between. Where before I would run like a few years ago, I'd just my normal runs would be 5 miles. Now on like a Wednesday, I'll go 7 to 8 miles and just like the mileage just like that way has gone up a little bit more. So I'm still trying to figure it out, and as I'm getting stronger, it's changing. But
yeah, it sounds like, I've got to admit, man, you sounds like you're proper on it. Like
you
know, so are you do you train on your own then at the moment, or are you still kind of jumping in with Giles and stuff when you can? I could take it.
Obviously just the last few weeks, obviously I've been racing a lot, so I haven't had to, like, I'm not really doing much. I'm doing kind of one session a week, some stuff to get ready to race, and then I'm racing like and rinse repeat. But a few weeks ago I was training a lot with Archie Davies.
Oh yeah, man.
We were doing a little bit together and stuff. So and then before that, really, I was in America training with the Hobby Boys and some other guys from San Diego. So
Nick Davies is a huge talent. 144, like huge talent. Yeah. I feel like he's gone under the radar a little bit, but mate, look, I want to touch upon, obviously, British champs. It was well documented. The kind of crowds were down and stuff. Just wondered what your thoughts were, how we can maybe boost crowds. Because I feel like, you know, I was actually speaking to Hookway about it. You know, I think it just rears its head every year at champs. You know, people moan. But, you know, how do we actually make a change? And as an athlete, do you actually care? Like, you obviously, you've got so much going on with performance. You want to perform. It's really not down to you anyway, is it, to make change? But would you want to make change? And any ideas how we could?
Oh, massively. I think that's one of the biggest upsetting things about the sport is, you know, I turn up to British champs and the crowds not being... I remember going back probably 8 years ago, British champs, they used to get a fairly good crowd. And I feel like years gone by, it's getting worse and worse. And
well, imagine if that was in Birmingham, how much emptier it would have felt.
Yeah, and it just would have... It's just not nice. You know, one of the biggest things about... I think running is the atmosphere, and having that atmosphere, I think, massively helps racing. You know, London was, I think, having the crowd there was one of the reasons why I ran so well. But I think something definitely needs to happen in the sport. I did a race in Manchester, Vicente. Used to box Manchester, and there was just no one in the crowd, but the cheapest ticket was £16. It's like, well, who can pay that? Firstly, the tickets are too expensive. Because most people who want to go and watch these events, they haven't got a load of money. So if there's five of them going and they spend, that's £100 on tickets, then they have to stay up. That's, if they're going to be able to even stay in a hotel or drive up, it's not as if it's the easiest place to get to. And then they've got to think about parking, food, it's going to end up becoming a stupidly expensive day. So I think with the tickets being as expensive as they are, it doesn't help to that cause. What can definitely put people off, I think, advertising around it. I mean, if I wasn't racing in it, I 100% wouldn't have known what day the British Champs was. I didn't probably know until a couple of weeks ago. I just knew it's 2 weeks from now. I didn't know what date it was. There's stuff around that, and then just I would prefer the stadium to be filled with school kids than no one. Do you know what I mean? If I was British Athletics, I'd prefer to get people in for free than have no one there at all, because it just helps the performance. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff. Like, when you're at that stadium, did you go on the weekend?
Hey, unfortunately, yeah, we sit here and moan, but yeah, we didn't go ourselves. So yeah, Lum double booked a holiday and I missed my lift. So
but even still, like when you go there, there's so many security guards. Like, I mean, there was like 50 security guards, and most of them were just standing around not doing much. And it's kind of like, how much are they gonna be paying for them? Some of the security guards should be used in the actual warm-up area, because the hurdlers just take up every single lane. Ridiculous a bit. Like, you're trying to walk, everyone's trying to do strides, and like, hurdlers are taking up every six lane in the middle, and you're like, what are you doing? Like, throwing hurdles out the way. And yeah, so like, having unnecessary security who could be doing other jobs, and I understand they have to have the security there, but that's obviously a cost out of their book. So I just feel like they need to, there seems to be a lot of unnecessary costs, and then there seems to be like overpricing. And maybe, I don't know, like I said, I don't know who sets the meets up, but I feel like someone like Tom Bedford should probably definitely be hired, because he sets up good meets, the Highgate 10Ks and the Kew Garden 10Ks and stuff like that. He does an amazing job. Get someone like him in there, and or get someone who just sets up these good meets,
hire
people, because to be fair, it's pretty fucking depressing.
It's almost as a fan, like, I actually almost feel disappointed for you guys, because you said, you sacrifice, you go on all these training camps, you sacrifice so much to turn up at British Champs. Three of you have got the prize to go to the World Champs, but the rest of you, it's kind of like, you turn up and it's like, man, another year, what do I do this for? But I think you're right with the cut. Like, I have no quite, like, the meet is very professional. Like, obviously all the Seiko timing, like, it looks good. Like, I feel like they do all that right. But yeah, they just need to attract it. I think advertising is huge. I think the timetable needs adjusting.
Timetable definitely could. There's too much time in between races.
Far too much, isn't it?
I mean, that's for the athletes. I mean, why they have us standing on the line for 10 minutes?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just kind of annoying. Like, they're rushing you out, and then you're doing a stride and they're telling you to not move from the line, and then you stand there for 10 minutes and you're like,
yeah.
So people, like, I don't really get what people are getting out of just watching us stand on the line.
Yeah.
Like, they should just make it shorter, get it. I mean, obviously that means there's probably more room for, delays and stuff, I guess, but yeah, it's...
But as an athlete,
I don't know, it just... It's hard.
Yeah, as an athlete, you wouldn't mind coming straight from the call-up room onto the track, bang, go.
One stride and go, I'd be well happy.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's the UK thing. Yeah. I don't feel like anywhere else I go, even the small meets in the UK, seem way too uptight. Like in Germany,
way too tight, man. Yeah.
In Germany, just generally, it was fun. There was more people in Germany in a random track in the middle of nowhere. It was like, it was smaller than a BMC, and there was more people there than practically the British champs. Everyone was in lane four. There was more cheers for me in Germany from the Germans than there were from the British in the UK, and because there's no one in the stadium. It's just something just seems wrong. Like if you, there's a race they have in Germany, the Berlin Tour or whatever. It's like the, basically it's like the like one below Diamond League. They fill like a 60,000 seat stadium out every single time.
Yeah, yeah.
It just, I don't know. There's something fundamentally, I think, wrong in the sport, but.
Well, that's it. Like you mentioned London 2017 and like the crowd we had there, there are a lot of British athletics fans out there. But it's just getting those people in for other meets that aren't just the world champs or even the anniversary games. Like
it's given them a reason to come back. You know, think about all them people who went and watched Birmingham Diamond League and had to, like you said, sit through hours of actually not watching anything because there was 10, 20 minutes between events. So,
I know athletics is, there's a lot of different things going on, but you've got to look at other sports as well. I know we're a very different sport, but, and I know we're not the fucking, I know we're not the Super Bowl, like, you know, the NFL with the Super Bowl or, you know, but you look at how UFC events run or boxing events are run or football, you know, I don't know. It just tends to be a bit more about it. Like, you know, they just tend to be fun events. Whereas track and field, I probably wouldn't, if I wasn't running, I probably wouldn't drive. I wouldn't drive all the way. And I love watching athletics, and I would definitely watch it online, but I would never drive all the way up to Manchester to see it because just don't think there's not enough to entice me to do it. Do you know what I mean?
It doesn't really have that day out feel, does it? Like the other sports you mentioned, like you think like, oh, you organise your mates, you might not even care about, like people might not even like boxing, for instance, but it's a night out. Whereas I don't think anyone's thinking, oh boy, should we go up to Manchester and watch the British champs? Like, that'd be a good laugh.
Beers, throwing beers.
Yeah.
But do you know what? I'll tell you what does get that Highgate 10K. Mm-hmm.
Yep, absolutely, it does.
And everyone's drinking beer and throwing beer around the beer tent. It's amazing. What an event that is.
Yeah. So, well, this leads us on to the media. Obviously, this weekend we saw people like Shikari. I mean, the Athletics Weekly kind of beef she had with them.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, as an athlete, do you kind of relish in the media? I mean, you've come on the podcast, so we've got to be grateful. I mean, we can't really call ourselves journalists, but, you know, we started to help share, you know, your stories, basically, because we feel there's so many athletes in the UK and your story is, you know, terrific as well. And I feel like, you know, athletes and the media, they should probably get along more, but I think you've had it from an athlete's perspective where the media has probably damaged your career. Yeah. It, at certain points as well. So I'm interested to see kind of where you stand with the athletic media, if you like, the small group of athletics media there actually is.
Yeah, I think the small groups of athletics media is better than that. Like the worst bits I've got are from big media outlets like The Guardian, Daily Mail and things like that. So, I mean, Shikari going at Athletics Weekly, I mean, really makes me. I like Shikari. I think she's a character. She's not running great, but I mean, I prefer the running to be better because it makes it a bit more cooler. But yeah, I feel like I think athletes probably need a bit more of a voice, and you know, things like your podcast that people can listen to and get a story behind the athletes is massive, and it's something that, you know. Half the problem is the world's changing. You know, if you're a certain belief system, you're going to get ridiculed or whatever, you know, whatever. And people are worried about it now. You know, I feel like the transgender thing that was going on, athletes are scared to speak out. You know, most athletes I speak to don't feel like biological men who have transferred to be a woman should be competing in women's sports. I feel like I was probably one of the first sportsmen to say anything. And then Ellie followed suit. And she was one of the first female professional sports, current sports people in the world to say anything. It's like people need to stop being so worried about speaking out and actually using positive media outlets to actually probably get the word across is better. But like, you know, and the problem is you get like ones, and it's all because of things like the Daily Mail and the Guardian and the Sun, and they just take snippets and quotes and they kind of mess it around to make it sound different than it should actually be, you know.
Yeah,
like, and you can be transgender, or I don't care, you know, do whatever you want, but I don't feel they should be running a women's sport. But I don't feel like I should get ridiculed for even saying that, because for me that's just, it's an opinion, and that's just kind of, I feel like that's the point of it. But I mean, yeah, people do, and people are worried about saying stuff like that, whereas I don't really care now. I've had enough of it. That what's one more?
Well, yeah, you're kind of in a great position, you know. You're almost like a footballer in a way. You've kind of had that bad press, that negative press. You come out the other side where, yeah, you now feel like you can speak freely about anything, and you don't care what gets written about you, which I think is awesome.
I was worried for a long time. It definitely
massively
affected my well, that was probably one of the biggest reasons over the last few years why I struggled to race, was because of that whole thing. And that one of the biggest things is what happened last year was I was like, I'm actually going to try and invite it more. You know, even little things like going to meets, and, you know, obviously I had the thing with the official where obviously I assaulted an official, what wasn't good. But, you know, and I paid my fine. I did my community service thing for it, but I had massive, like, backlash from actual officials. And this was before that. That wasn't the first time I had a run-in with officials. Officials, they're volunteers, so I feel like you get, you know, you can't fault them, but sometimes, especially in the UK, some of them abuse their power, and they definitely do.
They do, yeah.
And you get, you know, like things. So before going to British Champs in the 2019, someone cuts me up in my race. And because a coach moans, they're trying to get me. I walk into the call room, everyone's trying to get me disqualified, or just that coach is trying to get me disqualified. And then as I head out for the final, I have an official coming up to me saying, if you put a step wrong, we're just going to disqualify you straight up. And that's not the first time. That's happened to me so many times. It happened to me on the weekend. It happened to me this weekend. I was on the line and I had water in my mouth and I spat it out. I actually didn't know it was a rule. I just kind of spat a little bit out on the floor. I tried to do it discreetly.
Yeah.
And someone come up to me before, and I understand this because it's rules of rules, but said, this is a warning, but you will be disqualified if you do it again.
What? This is bonkers. This is so...
I had that this weekend. Well, I understand, because the spitting the water out, I mean, with COVID and things, I assume that's what it's about.
My God.
I mean, I don't really want to down a load of water before a race, because... I mean, I'll probably be sick of it. Yeah. I won't do that. But I mean, but I've had it like the reason I flipped out with the official was because he disqualified me, and then said, I've disqualified Commonwealth athletes before. I'm not, I will disqualify you. And in the end of the day, he actually got me mixed up for someone else. So the reason he was going to disqualify me was for running in lane one, and it ended up being someone else. And it wasn't even me who was meant to talk to. Yeah. Talk to someone else. So, like, and it's just the abuse of power in that. And yeah, so things like that, people just are just scared. Like, yeah, just like, so sometimes when I speak to foreign athletes, they go and they race in the UK, like, what is up with the British officials? Why are they so antsy? And like, I mean, 90% of them are fine. But I feel like we're saying, the UK, the whole track and field is just so uptight. It just needs to be a lot looser, you know. It needs to be fun, because that's the problem. At the moment, it's not fun, and it makes it, you know, Tom Staines on the weekend, you know, they're really pestering about his numbers on his legs, and they're saying, make sure they're east to west and things like that. And you can see he's getting a little bit wound up. He's not getting wound up, but he's getting a bit, he's already nervous sitting in the call room and he's getting flustered by it. And I'm going, he needs to go east to west. I'm going, why are you telling the sunrises and east to west? I'm like, what are you talking about? They're talking riddles to him. And he's like, and I was getting frustrated. I was going, just tell him to pin him on his leg. That's what literally what I was saying, was pin them either side on his legs. And he was going, and they were saying it in weird ways, like, and he was going on my chest. And it was just like they're, you know, checking every single spike in your spikes. And you know, any bit of branding they're taping up. Well, I understand that obviously for the TV, but it's like, man, it's British Champs on a red, like BBC red button. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not like it's, you know, I mean, I prefer it just to be on the British Athletics website if they're going to be. Yeah. It's like, so I just feel like it just needs to be more fun, because you get that in other places. It seems to just be a bit lot more relaxed. Even stuff like having a, you know, Vicente's meet the other day, and it was a great meet, but the fact that there was a 25-minute call room for a thing like that, like, you know, that's 25 minutes we have to sit in a pen for no reason. And it's like right before the race, and it, like, for certain races like World Champs and things like that, where it is televised and you have to make sure you've got, you know, the right kit or whatever on. Even then, I still think it's too long, but like, you go to other countries and you don't have a 25-minute, 30-minute call room. I just feel like it's unnecessary. And it's like, stop being so prim and proper. This is this needs to be an event to make where people want to run quick. It's not a championship. I don't know. It just, something seems like not right with it, but yeah. Just think minuscule things, little things that need to change.
You have had some bonkers experiences, but I totally agree with it. You know, I think I remember as kids, like, officials will almost scare kids away by threatening to DQ them for, I don't know, putting one foot on the inside or, you know.
Well, I got DQ'd at an under 17s for treading on the line.
Yeah.
And I had the race of my life, and I was 16 years old or 15 or however old, and I got disqualified for treading on the line.
Oh, was this at the England Champs?
Yeah, and it was like, but it was bizarre. It was like, why?
Yeah.
Why is that necessary to disqualify a kid?
Yeah.
And I was speaking to another kid that has just happened to at the most recent champs. They disqualified him in the final. Yeah. It's kind of just like, it's just unnecessary. It's just so uptight. It's like, you're not getting any advantage from it. They're kids. It's just like, yeah, just make it more fun. And you get people just, yeah, I don't know. Some officials, I think, like to bully younger kids as well. I see that a lot. And it does annoy me, because, you know, I'm a fiery person. I've always been. I have really struggled to hold my emotions in. But when I'm about to race, and I'm amped up, my adrenaline is going, my hands are shaking as it is, and then you have someone shouting at you for no reason, or like just doing something stupid, or just saying stuff under their breath. You know, with all that going on, man. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how it doesn't happen more, that people flip out. I mean, I've seen it a lot at the tracks. I think there's a lot of people don't see what happens sometimes, but some people, yeah, it gets out of hand.
Yeah,
it's out of hand.
No, for sure. Anyway, without being like too doom and gloom about the sport, though, we'll move on. But it is interesting to hear your perspective on it, because at the end of the day, you guys just want to run quick, and these are all things that influence.
You want to have fun.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think you're right, Carl, man. Yeah, you want to go to a meet and actually have fun at that meet, and that means having fun during the race and that whole race process. You know, you don't want to dread that. And yeah, I always thought cool rooms are places where they literally just give you a leg number for the electronic timing, or I think it's for photo finish they give out leg numbers, but yeah, give you a leg number.
That usually fall off after 5 meters as well.
That's the point as well. But yeah, and then out you go, you race, you know what I mean? Get the next one on. Like, yeah, I can totally hear you. And but yeah, it's interesting you say that, you know, with the whole media backlash and stuff, that did affect you. For quite a few years.
I did as well. Like, I definitely had PTSD from racing in the UK. What's my own fault, because I should be able to keep my cool and I didn't. And I have to, you know, that it was my fault. I have to take that. But I definitely had a massive, massive, like.
Yeah, were you like concerned when you rocked up at meets in the UK that people would be looking at you, be talking about you in a certain way?
100%. And, you know, and that one of the big things was, I am a fiery, slightly, when I go into race, like, you know, generally the way my personality changes when I come into races and I start becoming slightly more snappier. Ellie can tell you that. She's the same. She's just as angry as me. but you do, because you're getting amped up, you're ready to race. And what I started to do is I started to dull that down, because I was like, I would walk to a track, it's mostly in the UK, and go, oh, people think I'm this like thug or whatever. And I started to try and be too nice. And I think it was definitely taken away from my athletic performance. But then I was also walking to a track and thinking that people were looking at me and things like that, like talking about me and stuff. And it was like, who cares? I don't really care anymore now. And I've started to run better since. So it's kind of like,
yeah, I'm super glad you come out the other side. But yeah, I think there is probably a few athletes who kind of experienced that. And they, like you said, you've managed to come out the other side. I think people would struggle just because they're not exposed to it ever, you know?
Yeah.
So, but.
But obviously, moving on there, like London, not London, Eugene this summer, you got that. Obviously, what are your kind of goals going in? And then beyond that as well, how do you keep moving forward and carrying on this momentum?
Yeah, I feel like, although I've had quite a few races at the start of the season, I don't feel like I feel like I'm just starting to get into my stride a bit. I'm definitely way more prepared and stronger going into this year than I ever have been. Like I'm miles ahead from where I've ever been. So I'd like to think that I can go into this, I can go into Eugene and really start getting the wheels moving. I feel like I bounce on race from race, and usually after 15 races, I start to come really good. So I'm hoping by the time I get to 15, mate, around that, that's including heats and stuff like that. But like London 17, that year I probably had a ton of races before it, what were not great. And usually around 10 to 15, although I've had some good finishing in my last few races, there's like a feeling I get in my legs, my turnover, that I don't feel like I've completely accessed yet. And I feel like I start getting that, there's a turning point of racing when I start to get that leg turnover. I'm getting more and more confident. This weekend was a little bit of a kick in the teeth because I feel like I should have been able to go with the pace and I just didn't get on it, and I am a lot stronger, so that was frustrating for me. So I'm hoping to put that right. But for me, my goals this year is, I definitely would love to dip into the 143s. I think it's definitely feasible. The biggest goal is to make that final in Eugene. And making the final is the hardest part, but I know once I make the final, that's the sort of thing I thrive for. You know, there's a big change in personality when I get to these champs. Anyone can tell you who've seen me at a champs, I'm like a different Kyle once I get into that holding camp and I get into that, that big, big race mode, and there's almost like a switch in personality for me. So I think that's what I live for, is these big champs. So I'm excited that I've managed to get myself on the plane to Eugene, and I'm excited that, when I turn up there, that I am going to be in good form. I'm going to have to get a few more weeks of training, and I'm super excited, and I definitely think I could come away with a nice coloured medal.
Cool, man.
You have to get it right. It's not an easy event to get it right. It's a couple qualification.
Does people like, the way Bergen operates and the way he races, presuming like he was in a final, man, if we could have three Brits in the final, goodness. But, when you get someone like Bergen, I mean, obviously the days of Rhodesia are gone, but Bergen is kind of similar. And there is guys on the circuit who are also similar, take it out real hard, right? Does that kind of change the dynamic of these finals a little bit for someone like yourself, who I think, like you say, comes strong at the end? And you seem well suited to kind of like a little bit of a scrappier race as well sometimes.
I think someone like Max at the moment is unknown quantity. I think that kid can go on to do ridiculous things like Rhodesia. He's a special, special lad, and he will get beaten again, and he's going to have some bad races, but I generally think he could be one of the most special athletes of a generation. And he does remind me of Rhodesia, how relaxed and how strong he is. So I'm super excited for him. But for me, I feel like the thing I'm really good at, my part of racing is on a stronger race, is my ability to finish in a stronger race. And I feel like people think I can just finish fast in a slow race, but the races I've done well in is I finish strong off a faster pace. And so I just need to get myself more in contention and not get boxed in. As soon as I get myself into a stupid position, fighting around, if 800 meter running is about keeping it smooth. And if I can keep it smooth and get my head in the right gear, then, you know, sky's the limit. And the same for Max. And, you know, the way he runs, he definitely changes the dynamic. You know, there's some guys who go off crazy, but definitely aren't as good as him at doing it. He seems to have got it down to a T. Obviously, we've seen he's not the most competent at sitting back in a race and stuff. So it'd be interesting to see if he does take that into it. But his biggest thing, obviously, I don't know him that well, but is, I think, actually getting to the races. If he can get there, I think he could be do some serious special stuff. Seriously special stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I think, like you say, he's just, he's mental in that sense that the other guys, they might take it out hard, but you kind of can almost let them take it hard because you know they're going to die. Whereas with him, like you say, it's a bit unknown, like he can keep pressing. But I think you make a good point about yourself being able to kick off a fast pace, because like you mentioned before, you're running PBs in those finals, and you've done that since World Youth.
Yeah. No, definitely. And that's the thing, like I've always tend to set PBs in the big events. You know, I've always set my PB other than this Germany race when the pressure is really high on these high pressure moments. You know, the amount of times I've gone into a race where I've needed to get the qualifying time and I get it by a second and PB. I've done that every single time, pretty much. And, you know, or I go into a world champs and I run well. So, you know, for me, I know what I'm capable of. It's just about now putting it into practice and physician and just racing as good as I can be, you know. Same goes for everyone in there. We're all human and equal on the line, but you know, it's just enjoying it and having fun, you know. And that's, I enjoyed London. I was so cocky and it was like I was going to a party. I didn't even care what was going on. I was so confident. So I've just got to take that in there, take my fiery self and try not to get into any fights and get to the start line.
Yeah,
I think you're right, man.
Well, it's been great to chat to you, and we wish you all the best with Eugene, mate.
Cool, thank you for having me on. Cheers, it's been good.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.